good morning, Reality Church. How are you guys feeling? You doing all right? Woo! Did the thunder wake you up this morning? It woke me up. Good morning, Lance. A little bit earlier than I wanted to wake up. Welcome to Reality Church. My name is Lance Birch. I'm one of the pastors here. And if this is your first time, so glad you made the choice to get up and be here today. And if you're watching us online, thank you for clicking on this one. I hope that you get something out of today. That's why we're kind of doing what we do. We've been doing a series called Everybody Wins, but it hasn't been just our church. We've done this. We've locked arms with pastors all over the metro area. 35 pastors have been doing these sermons, Everybody Wins, and it's been phenomenal. Well, not just a sermon series, by the way. We've been partnering with nonprofits. We've been looking out into our community and saying, where can we get involved, our church in particular, and bring the reality of God to places that it needs to be? Where can we bring God's reality to places that, you know, just people need to know that there's a God that loves them, that forgives them, that has a place for them, that can tangibly love them through the church? So we're super excited about that, because when people get invested like this, things really change. They really do. Life change happens because of this, so we're just happy. And this is more than just a sermon series, too. This is a three-year process by which these churches, over 50 of them, have said, look, we believe that Omaha is within reach. If everybody gets in the game, then Omaha is within reach. We can reach this community for Jesus Christ. We can see life change happen on a much larger scale than maybe we've believed in the past. So super excited about that. Speaking of getting in the game, you guys have heard of the Huskers, right? Okay, they're a team a little bit to the west of here. They play football. Yeah, of course you've heard of them. Last week they had this little game, then people showed up for it. 73,000 people showed up for a football game that wasn't really even a game, right? It was defense against offense. And we show up. And by the way, I'm not making fun of you. I'm coming out right now as a full-on Husker fan. Now, I've been here for 5 years. I'm following them. I'm like you guys. I'm invested in it. Some of you guys are disappointed, but I'm in, all right? I am in. You check out, you don't just show up. You check out the offense and the defense and the freshmen that are coming in, the recruits, how are they doing? You know who's leaving football altogether, and we're sort of mourning that. You're checking out the backup quarterback, O'Brien. How is he going to be? Looks pretty good to me. But anyway, spring game was phenomenal. 73,000 people invested in the gas. They went out there, they bought, they invested in something red to wear, and they got out there and they screamed with everybody. Bought a drink, bought a hot dog, whatever. They invested in that moment, and it was really, really cool. But nobody is as invested in that moment as those kids out there on the field. The ones with the jerseys on. The ones, because when we're not thinking about the game, they're thinking about the game. Nobody put in the practice that they put in. Nobody sweat. Nobody got bruises. Nobody got iced up like they did. And because of that, nobody celebrates the victories quite like they do. You get that? I mean, the ones who have been going, the ones who were running off to the sideline to vomit during practice, those are the guys that get to jump up and down when they win. And when we're driving home, and we're just like, we've forgotten about the game, we're jamming to something on the radio, they're still jumping up and down in the locker room. Because nobody celebrates a victory, and nobody has the agony of a loss like the people that are on the team, the people that were actually in the game. So, nobody is more concerned about the outcome than they are. Nobody was more invested in that game in particular than a kid named Kyle Kassoun. Did you hear his story? Unreal. Kid from right here in Papillion, kid from Papio South. He isn't even on the team. In fact, the season before, he watched their games from the stands, and he said he cried every game. Not because he was, emotional like we all get when we're in Memorial, but because he wanted to be on the field, and he knew that he could, he knew that he had something in him. So he, during an open tryout, he and about 20 other people tried out, and he got onto the squad and didn't even think that he'd get into the spring game. Had no indication that he would. And then on the last play of the game, O'Brien, our future quarterback, drops back and throws an interception to Kyle Kassoun. He catches it, and because of their scoring system, he seals the win for the defense. And so they win. And people are carrying him off of the field. This is a kid who wasn't even on the team, and they're carrying him off the field. This is a real Rudy moment. Ka-soon, ka-soon. I don't know what they would yell. They wouldn't have yelled that, by the way. Why? Because nobody knew his name. They interviewed the players, and they said, who was that kid? I don't even know. We were carrying him off the field. I don't know him. Man, guys, when you get in a game like that, when we get in a game like that, everybody wins. When we get in the game, nobody cares like the people that have sweat, that have bled, that have been bruised, that have endured some losses together. Nothing bonds people that have endured. They looked across at each other and said, we're going to own this. Not you, not me, but together we own this loss. Nobody is invested like people who are in the game. That's what this whole series, Everybody Wins, has been about. That's the whole thing. Basically, that you can, we've had 5 weeks of this, and if you're not in the game, these 5 weeks mean absolutely nothing. They're just another Bible study for us. They're just one more nugget of knowledge that we can post on Facebook or we can write in our journal. It means absolutely nothing if we don't get in the game. Week one, we said, when death dies, everybody wins. We did this on Easter. You know, it was no big deal. It's sort of a big deal to his followers that Jesus was crucified. I'll give you that. But it wasn't a big deal in terms of history. There were other teachers that got crucified. In fact, there were other criminals that got crucified. This was a normal thing for people to do. If someone was a murderer or if they were an insurrectionist, they were a rebel and they were trying to overthrow the government, they crucified them. They hung them up on a tree. They buried them. This was no big deal. The crucifixion was just the last, it was the period at the end of Jesus' life, and it killed his movement. Except we're here. So something happened about 2,000 years ago, and I think it's this: death died. Your biggest enemy, that thing that you think about that sends a cold chill down your spine, was killed 2,000 years ago. And if that's true, then the resurrection changes everything. And I believe the resurrection. I believe there's more evidence for the resurrection than for some stolen body or some he didn't die on the cross or whatever other theory you want to come up with, because you're explaining away the existence of a church that would absolutely not exist if Jesus hadn't risen from the dead. It makes no sense that you're even in this room unless something happened 2,000 years ago. When death died, everybody wins. Because the resurrection changes every single thing. Week two, we said, when we get real, everybody wins. Because in church, it's the place where we're most likely to be fake. Unfortunately. Well, we're most likely to be tempted to be fake because we perceive the people around us to have their stuff together. But by way of confession, I'm a mess, and so are you. And we know someone that can put that mess back together. We know someone who can redeem us. But when we get real, everybody wins, because it's us saying, you know what, I'm not okay. I'm not. I may be mad at God. I may be completely misunderstanding what's going on here. I may have an addiction. This may be something that's going on in my relationships. I have really wounded some people. I'm not okay. But in the church, I don't know what your story is, but whatever it is, when you came here today, I want you to know this: not enough is okay. Not because it's good, but because Jesus is enough. If you want to grow, if you want to change, then getting real is step one, because not enough is okay because Jesus is enough. Week three, we said, when free stuff is really free. Robert did an amazing job on this sermon. When free stuff is really free, everybody wins. Have you ever gotten an offer that was sort of free? Somebody came by my house, and listen, my dad was a salesman. I come from a long line of salesmen. I love them. I think it's just one of the hardest jobs ever. But I feel that he got my information because I might win this thing, and he's going to go back to his office, and then if I win it, he's, you know, which I am going to win, by the way. I don't know if you've gotten it. I am going to win the free gift. But is it free? It's not free, because I'm going to have to, you know, see a demonstration. And I love it, and I love that people are out there and they're doing that stuff, but it's not really free, is it? It's that I'm going to have to go through that demonstration, whatever it is. I think it's going to be a vacuum cleaner, and I think those things are cool, so I'll watch it. I already have a vacuum cleaner, though. When free stuff is really free, everybody wins. Because when you hear about the grace of God, honestly, doesn't it sound too good to be true? Because let me clarify the gospel for you. You're bad. like way worse than you ever thought. And you think that you're bad. I mean, you look at yourself in the mirror and you go, you know what? I'm kind of messed up. You're worse than that. You know the tip of the iceberg about you. And there is this huge thing in your life, selfishness, greed, lust, pride, that we cover up and we make it, you know, look pretty. Oh, it's worse than you thought. You're far worse than you ever thought. And you're more deeply loved than you could ever possibly imagine. It's better than you thought. God just doesn't kind of like you. He doesn't sort of kind of feel affection to you. The God of all creation is head over heels for you. He writes your name on his hand and he doesn't forget it. He spins around in wild anticipation of you coming home. His heart beats faster as he considers you. You're far worse than you ever thought, but more deeply loved than you could ever hope or imagine. That's the gospel, and it's free. You can't make yourself more lovable to God. Did you know that? You can't. You're adorable to God. He loves you. Gosh, that's good news if you get it. God would never treat us. This is the gospel too. God will treat you as if you've never done anything wrong because of what Jesus did on the cross. He will treat you as he would treat Jesus if you believe in Jesus. Wow. That's good stuff. When free stuff is really free, everybody wins. When hearts are broken, everybody wins. You remember, a couple of weeks ago, we talked about, I think it was last week. So, last week, we looked at Jesus, who was brokenhearted for his friends. And he was brokenhearted as he looked over Jerusalem. And he just wanted so much for them, but it wasn't happening. And yet, as the church, we sometimes put it on cruise control. We don't want our hearts to be broken. We want to be safe. But we asked last week, what breaks your heart? What is your have to? A guy came up to me after one of the services, a friend of mine named Tom, and he gave me a phrase that I used at the 4:30 service. He said, you know what the sand in my bathing suit is? And I thought, that's so perfect. Because you've got to do something about that, right? You don't just let that hang around. You're getting out of there, you know, that sort of thing. What is the sand in your bathing suit? What breaks your heart? What's your have to? I have to do something about this, or I just feel like I'm going to die. It can't stay this way, because that's you, step one, getting in the game, determining, well, who's the opponent? Who is kind of breaking down our culture or our society or my life? Who's the opponent? Because step one to getting into the game is saying, well, who am I playing? Who am I going up against? What am I playing for? So when we say that, when hearts are broken, everybody wins, what we're really saying is, God, I want to be in on what you're doing. I want to be in on how you are bringing your reality to this world. And I'm going to cry like you cried. When Jesus was at Lazarus' tomb, he cried. He didn't just cry emotional tears. He cried out. And he said, he changed things. So when you can cry like that, when you can cry like Jesus, then you can learn to love like Jesus, which moves out into the world, actually does something for people, actually gets involved. And so I want us as a church to have our hearts broken. I know that sounds counterintuitive, but that means we get involved after that. When you can cry like Jesus, what is it for you? Is it starving children? Is it dying marriages? Is it the homeless? Is it kids with no families? Is it abortion? Is it human trafficking? Is it social injustice? Is it a need for discipleship and people growing? Well, I'm challenging you today to not just be simply an observer, not just an invested observer, but to get on the field, get in the game, because if you don't, none of this matters. None of these weeks matter. Everybody loses if it's a sermon series. Does that make sense? Everybody loses if this is just chalked up as one of those cool things that we did. So get in the game. Some of my interests have changed over the last few years, I will confess to you. Over the last few years, I have developed interests that I didn't think I'd ever develop. For one, Once Upon a Time, which is a television program. Don't judge me. Once Upon a Time. I have 5 girls, in case you don't know this, all of them teenagers. Hang on a second. All right. I got 5 teenage girls in my house. And I, you know, they said, let's watch Once Upon a Time. And so I watched it with them, and I was miserable at first. And then I got like way too involved in it. It's like, oh no, what's happening with Snow? You know, and I'm like, oh, she stole her heart. Oh, she's got a dark spot on her heart. I'm like, what's gonna happen? So I'm like way too involved in it. Why is that? Because I love those girls. And they're popping popcorn and they're going downstairs and they want to watch Once Upon a Time. So I care about them, so I care about what they care about. Doctor Who became an interest of mine. I've got a Whovian in my house. I don't know as much about it, but I've looked at all of the encyclopedias of Doctor Who, and I'm learning how many times he's what did he do? Regenerate, thank you, because I was going to say reanimate, and that sounded gross. He regenerates, and he's like always a different person, and I thought his name was Doctor Who on the show. His name is not Doctor Who, it's the Doctor, and every time he introduces himself as the Doctor, then the people who are talking to him say, Doctor Who, and that's how I did not know that. K-pop, did you know that there's a musical style that's sweeping across the world from South Korea, and it's Korean, and it's pop, hence the K-pop. This music fills my house. I have had to learn about groups like EXO and other groups, so I've sung along with some of these things, because sometimes they sing English, not well, but they sing it. Paris, France. I have a girl who's obsessed with Paris, France. So when we had a birthday, we bought her all. Her room is decorated in all of this stuff, and she loves Audrey Hepburn. So she's got pictures of her. It's all black and white and red. And I developed an interest and talked with her about that. Paramore. There is a song by Paramore that goes off in my house. I have every word memorized. I will not say it because it will be in my head. James Rodriguez, who is a player for the Colombian Select team, and who I followed because now he plays for Real Madrid, and he's amazing. He was one of the leading scorers in the World Cup, and just an amazing guy. Now, that's because I have two Colombian girls in my household who I don't think that they care whether he plays soccer well or not. Actually, they would be obsessed with James Rodriguez if he was just walking down the street. Recently, the weird thing for me is I've got involved in something called Winter Guard, which sounds like a guard that's, you know, kind of making sure winter doesn't happen, but it's not that. It's flags, and they throw their flags up, and I had to go to one of these competitions. I'm sitting in this. They make you, no kidding, this is a miracle. People, they make you pay $8 to sit down on a hard wooden bench and watch people throw flags in the air, and I thought, whoa. All right, this is the love of a parent. And then I'm sitting there, right? And I'm watching these things, and all of a sudden I'm critiquing. I'm like, wow, did you see the way that snapped? And wow, yeah, they're really in unison. I'm like, who am I? These guys, dads were walking in and they said, guard dad. And I'm like, I think I want one of those shirts. I'm a guard dad is who I am. Listen, when you start to care about somebody, you want to get involved in what they're involved with. Robert Kahn put it this way. I thought it was a great quote. He said, do you love that picture? He does. I said, Robert, submit a picture. And he submitted this one. You can't have an intimate relationship with someone and not care about the things they care about. I love that. You can have a surface relationship, by the way. You can have one of those relationships where it's like you can use people and not care about what they care about. But you can't be intimate with someone. You can't really get to know someone. You can't really love someone without caring about what they care about. And if you claim to have an intimate relationship with Jesus, you can tell where I'm going with this, then you're going to start caring about what Jesus cares about. You just can't help it. And what does Jesus care about? Because there's a lot of possibilities. The glory of God? Well, yes, absolutely. But if it's only the glory of God, then why creation? Why did he make this world? Why did he make the universe? Why the incarnation? Why did he wrap flesh around God and come and be with us? If that's the only thing, because the glory of God would have gone on. If it was theology, well, then he was on the planet. He would have snuggled up next to the Pharisees, and they would have Bible study after Bible study, and that would have been all that they did. But it seems like as you really look at what Jesus was obsessed with, it's people far from God. That's why he made us. That's why he came and rescued us. He really cares about people that are far from God. If you're in this room right now and this is your first time back at church, I want you to know that Jesus' heart is towards you. You might have thought that maybe God was mad at you, but he's not. He loves you. His wrath is towards people who are outside of his grace. But listen, his heart towards you is grace. He wants to give you that. He wants to give you that because he always cared for the lepers. He always cared for the poor. He cared for the prostitutes. He cared for the people that everybody else hated. He cared for the outcast. He cared for the people who didn't feel like they belonged at church. He cares for people who are broken and who don't think that they're fixable. Jesus moves in. He's got this obsession with people. And if Jesus is obsessed with people like that, to the point where when he was about to go to heaven, the last thing he told his disciples was, hey, go get more people, okay? There's us, but there's people out there that don't know me. Go get them. Teach them. Make disciples of them. Baptize them. Do that stuff because there's people that don't know. He was obsessed with people. And if we really care about Jesus, can you fill in the blank here? What are we doing just thinking about ourselves? We got to care about the people that are far from God. That's what we're about as a church. That's what Reality Church is about. Our church is not an old church. We're less than 20 years old. We were started with 40 people in a rented music store. And now we're averaging 820 people. And we are seriously focused on one thing. Over the past 20 years, we've been known as a place. When Rod Anderson started us and Brian Clausen continued, we've been known as a place for people who are far from God. Now listen, we don't do everything here. We can't do everything. And not only that, guys, let me just confess to you, we don't want to do everything. We can't be the one-stop shop for everything that people think a church should be. We would just run ourselves into the ground if we decided to do that. There are other churches in this area that do a better job at some things than what we do. It may be their facility. It may be that you might have a different musical preference. You might like the preaching style better there. There are churches who do things better than us. So we do our thing. You don't go to Stella's and order a Meat Lover's pizza, right? That would be ridiculous. They would go, yeah, we don't do that. But they make a pretty good burger. So as a church, let's decide, what do we do? And what we do here with we just furiously do this. When it comes to knocking down barriers for someone who's far from God, knocking down the barriers between them and Jesus, well, we're pretty good at that. We're pretty good at that. So let's stick with it. Let's keep doing that. And let's find those barriers and let's knock them down because people are far from God. And guess what? Jesus cares about those people more than we do. They're out there. They don't know that there's a God that loves them. They don't know that there's a God who can forgive them. They don't know that there's a God who's inviting them to the best party they'll ever go to. They think that God is judgmental. They think that God is legalistic. They think that God hates them. They think that church people hate them. And we're going to knock down those barriers. That's what we do. And we do it with intention because Jesus cares about them. I don't think, honestly, I know people are doing it as well as us, but I don't think anyone's doing it better than what we're doing. And I think it's because it's not patting us on the back. I just think that God has given us that. So let's do it with everything we got. What was it that compelled the early church to go out there and care for people? To get out of their comfort zone and go into other people's lives that were so far from God? Because they were really good at it. By 350 AD, did you know this? By 350 AD, over 50% of the world's known population were Christian. By 350, they were doing, this is the days before cars, this is the days before internet, this is the day before mobile phones. They were spreading the gospel on their 2 feet, walking around, talking with people. What compelled them to do that? It's because they loved Jesus so much that they cared about what Jesus cared about. Look at what it says in 1 John 1. 1 John 1, 1 says this, and this is John talking, this is one of the guys who hung out with Jesus. That which was from the beginning. They're talking about Jesus there. John wrote another book called The Gospel of John, and he said Jesus was in the beginning. That which was from the beginning, which we have heard, which we have seen with our eyes, which we have looked at, and our hands have touched, this we proclaim concerning the word of life. Now, what's the word of life? That's Jesus himself. Jesus is the word of life. In other words, Jesus is the perfect representation of God. He's the perfect representation of God's mind. He's the perfect representation of God's heart. So when we look at the Word of Life, and when John and all the other guys looked at the Word of Life, they were looking at God with skin on. And we're proclaiming that to you. We didn't just, it's not about a teaching. We're not proclaiming to you a teaching. We're not proclaiming to you an experience. We're not proclaiming to you some sort of mystery that we had to unlock solely with our minds. No, we are witnesses. We saw it. We heard it. We looked at it. We touched it. It was God. He is God. This is no small thing for them to say this. These, by the way, are past tense. Heard and seen and looked and touched. They're all in past tense. They're in different past tense, by the way. Looked and touched are in the aorist sense of just, you know, that is something that just happened. By all scholars who look at this, John was writing this about 60 years after Jesus. And so these are things that were in the past tense. Let me see. I looked and touched are simple aorist past tenses. Heard and seen, by the way, though, are in perfect active past tense, which means we heard it and it's still ringing in our ears. We saw it, but when we close our eyes, we still see it. It impacted our lives so much that I can't unknow it. I can't unsee it. Do you have anything in your life like that? I remember one time I was holding Hannah. I was singing her to sleep. And I told myself, I closed my eyes really tight, and I said, Lance, don't forget this moment. Don't forget it. And you know what? I didn't. Did you know you could do that? You could tell yourself, don't. This is one of those. I was standing on the porch with Amy. I was picking leaves off of the bush, nervously wondering whether I should kiss her. I did. And I never forgot it. Maybe you have moments in your life like that. I remember walking into the cafeteria, senior year, 1986, January 28th, and on the screen they were playing the Challenger going up, and every single time it ended the same way. And we didn't want it to end the same way, but we just sat there stunned looking at it. I remember the airplane flying into the World Trade Center. I remember I was actually in a car and I heard it, that they thought it was a fluke, that they thought that it was something that was just an accident. I went and I sang. I had my guitar, and I went to Hannah's kindergarten class because she was the star student of the day. And I played the guitar and we sang, and I read to them the monster at the end of this book. And then I got out of there and I heard about the second plane. I got to the office that day and saw the second plane hit. And then I saw him fall. Do you guys remember that? Of course you do. If you were there, you remember it. It's burned in. February 1st, I think it was 2004. I know it was February 1st. It was a Saturday. I was in Lufkin, Texas, and I was just watching TV, and this huge noise was outside of my house. I walked outside onto the porch, and there's this going on and on, like there was a train above my house. I walked inside about 15 minutes later. News broke in and they said, we've lost contact with the Columbian shuttle on reentry. And I turned to Amy and I said, oh my gosh, that's it. Because it goes straight over Lufkin, Texas. And it fell out of the sky all over Lufkin and Nacogdoches. Never, ever forget it. I can't unknow it. I can't unsee it. And these disciples were exactly the same way. They couldn't unknow it. They couldn't unsee it. Their life would never go back to whatever it was before. Whatever they called normal before, it couldn't go back. And guys, it ought to be that way for us. Once we experience Christ that way, you can't unknow it. You can't unsee it. You can try to tell yourself. You can numb it away. You can go off and get involved in all sorts of stuff. But you know down deep it's there. And you got to do something about it. So this is what they did. That life appeared. We've seen it. We testify to it. It was here. And we proclaim to you the eternal life, which was the Father, which was with the Father and has appeared to us. He wasn't just a story. He wasn't just a myth. Jesus was for real. He was tangible. We proclaim to you what we have seen and heard so that you may also have fellowship with us. This lived in them to the point where they were in the game. They couldn't get out. When you experience something great, don't you want to tell other people about it? Even if it's something silly like good food, right? You tell somebody. I went to this great restaurant. And if you've got Pinterest or if you've got Instagram, you take a picture of it because everybody wants to see other people's food. That's just something that lives in all of us, I guess. So you see a good movie, you want other people to see it. You tell people about it. When it's that small, we get involved and we tell people about it. If you've experienced Jesus, if you've really experienced his grace, I don't know. Let me ask you a question. Have you found it good? Have you found it good? Has it met your need? Has it hit you where you lived? Then get in the game. Tell somebody else about it. Why would we keep that from somebody? Why would we not tell somebody about that? Get in the game. How do you do it? How do you get in the game? Three things. Number one, belief. Belief. That's how you and I, step one, get in the game. Belief compels you to action. What did John believe? John believed a few things, and his friends believed a few things. Jesus Christ was God in the flesh. He came to earth. He died for our sins. There was this gap between humanity and God, and Jesus filled it with a cross. And he is the only way to get to God. Eek. That sounds exclusive. That doesn't sound PC to me. That sounds a little arrogant. But remember, Jesus himself said that, John 14:6, I am the way, by the way, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. Sounds arrogant, but here is Jesus saying it. So the first thing he says is, I am the way. Jesus is not a way to God. God is not a location. So when you hear someone who says, you know what, there are many paths that lead to God. Well, that works if God is a location. He is not. He's a person. And he defines how you get to know him. Just the same way, by the way, that you define for other people to get to know you. There are not many paths that lead to Lance. There's the way that I want you to get to know me. And God is a person, and he says, you know what? You get to know me through the one I sent, through my messenger. Not through all the other messengers, but through my messenger. The one who represents me. I am the way. We can't choose our own pathway to God. There's no other way. Is that exclusive? Absolutely. But if you're in a burning building and I run up to you and I say, hey guys, I've mapped out the building. There's really only one way out of here. Well, you got a choice, right? And you can get all uppity and say, you know what? I'm going to find my own way. I don't care what you say. Well, okay, fine. But there's one way out. Okay, fine. Well, then I'll prove it to you. And you go and you find your way to death. And what if there is one way? It's not arrogant to say it at that point, is it? It's actually pretty nice to tell somebody, hey, there is a way out. We are actual, all of us, when we share the gospel with someone, we're telling them not a bad thing, but the best thing they've ever heard. I am the way. Jesus goes on to say, I am the truth. And we live in an age where we hear the phrase, well, you know, what's true for you is not necessarily true for me. I've gotten into those conversations with my daughters, and that's a real, you know, head exploder for me. Because I say, no. When I say it's true in this house, it's absolutely true. That's what's gonna happen. No, but it might be true for you, but it's not true for me. No, you're grounded, like for real. It's true globally. Jesus is saying at this point, and this might sound offensive, your truth really doesn't matter. Because I am the truth. Truth is not an idea, it's a person. I am the truth. So he starts out with, I am the way, I am the truth, and he finishes it off with, I am the life. There's no other life like my life. My life couldn't be killed. They put me in a tomb. They couldn't keep me dead. Do you want that kind of life? Because I've noticed that when you guys die, Jesus looking at these guys, I've noticed that when you guys die, you have a tendency to stay dead. I don't. I am the life. The life that you really want, that's me. There's no other life worth living. Jesus didn't stay dead. He was resurrected, and they saw it. Guys, the same power that raised Jesus, the Holy Spirit, that raised Jesus from the dead, lives in you. What you think is dead right now in you can come alive because the Holy Spirit lives in you. So believe. You can do that right now. You can fill out a believe card. It's probably right in front of you. You know what? I didn't understand the gospel. I understand it now. You can fill out that believe card and you can put it in a box and we will get back with you. We will talk with you. We'd love to tell you about the best decision you would ever make. So the second thing is behavior. Here's where it is. I knew I was at church. They're going to start talking about my behavior. You guys need to act like a Christian and listen to K-Love and buy a Christian t-shirt and stop doing that bad stuff that you're thinking about doing right now. I knew that was going to happen. Guys, since when did acting like a Christian become a bad thing, first of all? Probably after Christians started acting like Christians out there in the culture. Because the first century Christians, when they said, I'm going to act like a Christian, what they meant was, I'm going to show compassion and kindness and grace, the same grace that was shown to me. Yes, I'm going to tell people the truth, but I'm going to share that truth with grace and kindness. You know, you need to do that. You need to change your behavior from criticism to compassion. Man, wouldn't that just revolutionize many of your workplaces if people would change criticism to compassion? If you could, this is the healthiest thing you can do. Just make a decision that the people in your life are doing the best they can. And it's healthy for you. Maybe it's not even true, but it's healthy for you. To just make that, give people compassion and the same grace that you need. Spend your energy expressing kindness rather than kicking people when they're down. Sometimes the church is the worst place to go when you're wounded because we don't seemingly have enough time for our wounded, so we just turn our head and kind of shoot them. Like, no, they're not wounded anymore. They're dead. That's not a real good strategy for growth, for recruitment, or for victory when we shoot our wounded. So behave like a Christian. The early church majored on forgiveness and not fixing someone up. Jesus never required someone to get themselves fixed up before he would accept them into his, you know, the group that followed him. And we don't want to hang out with people that are out there that are far from God, but Jesus did. Because we think guilt by association. What are people going to think of me if I hang out with these people? I'm so glad Jesus didn't share that opinion, by the way. What if he had said, looked down at the planet and said, I don't know, those people are, they're pretty nasty. I am not going to hang out with them. Other people will think I identify with them. No, he didn't. He came down there to be with the likes of me and you. We would be doomed, all of us, if Jesus had had that mindset. So the last one is boldness. Boldness. This is confidence in who Jesus is and what he can do through me and what he's called me to do. And I get it. It's easy for me in here to say, you know, the name of Jesus. Very rarely do people throw things at me when I talk about Jesus in here. Totally different deal when you're out there in the world. Sometimes you get a verbal, you know, made fun of. It's not really persecution because we're wimps and we consider anything persecution in America. There are people being persecuted, you know, I want you to know that, but not here. Yeah, but somebody said I was weird. Okay, all right, fine. I'm not telling you, by the way, boldness does not mean to go to work Monday and just jump up on your desk and say, Jesus! And wait for people to respond. They will respond. But here's what it looks like when we're bold. This is how we know what love is. This is bold love. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers and sisters. If anyone has material possessions and he sees a brother and sister in need but has no pity on them, how can the love of God be in that person? Dear children, let us not love in words or speech only, but with actions and in truth. So boldness in lifestyle, speech, boldness in generosity. You know, we had the Inside Out sermon series, but it's more than just a sermon series. By the way, we've had $43,000 given to Inside Out to this date in about 4 weeks. So that's, yeah, we're just through the roof excited about that. One more thing, our appraisal came through and everything is cleared for us to close in May. So let's celebrate that one even big. Yeah. But guys, we're going to need you to get in the game on this. We got 50 cards turned in. We probably need about 200 of them to be turned in. We're going to be continuing to talk about this because we are knocking down barriers between young families and Jesus. We want to knock down any barrier for a young family coming to our church to have an opportunity to hear about Christ. But there's something even more tangible, right? Not more tangible, but it's immediate. Outside, you may have noticed a little display for the Big Live. Did you notice that when you came in? Yeah, there's a display out there. You can sign up for projects all around our community to join with the effort to bring God's reality to our world. People who need to hear about Jesus, people who need to see what Jesus' love looks like. So sign up today. Read what those projects are. Get involved. It's coming up really soon and in 2 weeks. So So be involved in that. When we get in the game, guys, everybody wins. It's happening. It's happening. God's reality is moving into places. It's happening. Are you in? Man, I pray that you are. Let's pray together.